As you know, we are in a series called U 2.0, if you haven't figured that out yet. And today, I want to spend some time talking about our perception. That's right, I want to talk about our perception, how you and I see and process and look at the things that are going on around us. Our perception. Now, you've all heard this saying, this phrase, we've all heard it, we've probably all said it. It goes like this: perception is reality, right? Would you say it with me? Ready? Perception is reality. Now, of course, sometimes that's true. Perception is reality. Other times it's not, right? I mean, if you sort of think about it, you know, you can actually show two different people the same object or the same thing, and they will sometimes see two different things, right? Let's try this, okay? You want to try? Here we go. Let me put a couple images up here. Here's the first one. What do you see when you look at this? What is it? Say it out loud. Yeah, okay, so, yeah, some of you see a skull, and if you see a skull, you are sick and twisted because there's no skull there, okay? No, I'm just, and some of you see scary-looking folks, I don't know if that's any way. Either way you look at it, it's a little bit frightening, okay? Here's another one. Take a look at this. What do you see? Some of you see a bunny. Some of you see a duck. Do you see that? Who does not see the duck? If you don't see the duck, turn your head like this. And yeah. See, now it's all coming together. Perspective. So you have one image, and you have two different perspectives. Maybe some of you saw even something else in there. I don't know. That could mean you need therapy. I don't know. Anyway, reminds me of a quote that I heard a while back. It goes like this, very simple. Change the way you look at things, and the things you look at change. It's true, isn't it? The bottom line is this. Okay, here's the deal, and this is why this is so important for us to talk about today. Even though my perception of my problem or my challenge or my issue or whatever you want to call it, okay, even though my perception of whatever it is I'm facing might look totally different from your perception of even, let's say, a similar thing that you're going through, doesn't matter how different they look, ultimately and eventually, my perception will become my reality. And your perception will become your reality, regardless of whose perception is more accurate or right and whose is not. Your perception eventually becomes your reality. The psalmist said it this way, very simple. For as he, it says, thinks in his heart, so is he. Right? Our perceptions become our realities, which is good when our perceptions lead us into positive action. It's good when our perceptions lead us into solutions and growth and progress. But it's not so good when our perceptions lead us into, well, when our perceptions, let's say, paralyze us. Or when our perceptions cause us to give up on our dreams. Or cause us to settle for second best, or cause us to become bitter, or just flat out causes us to give up. See, and the tough part about all of this is that most of us, we have just learned very well how to think from almost like a deficit standpoint, haven't we? We for many of us, it's like we've become conditioned to think certain ways about opposition and challenges, right? Many of us, like, our tendency is to focus way more on, let's say, our weaknesses versus our strengths. For a lot of us, we focus a lot more on what isn't working versus what is working. Or we focus more on what's problematic versus what's possible. Or we focus more on what is bothersome and irritating about other people versus what's, you know, positive and admirable about others. And I'll tell you what, it happens so easily. That's right, and you know what? It even happens to those of us who consider ourselves to be very optimistic people. I mean, I am definitely an optimist. I put a positive spin on just about everything, sometimes to a fault. But I am an optimist, and I was reminded of how easily it is sometimes to jump into the wrong kind of thinking and have the wrong perception. A couple weeks ago, I was finding myself dealing with a really, really tough situation. And I was exhausted, I was tired, and in the midst of all of it, I went and talked to one of my mentors about it. And I shared with him how I was feeling and how disappointed I was. I was being really honest, how I was feeling angry, I was feeling hurt, I was drained, I felt like this was sometimes consuming my mind and all of this, and I just kind of like vomited, you know, all of that out. And he looked at me after I got done spilling all this on him, and he looked at me and he asked me a very simple question. He said, "Scott, where is the blessing in all of this?" You know what? Can I pray about that? Did you say blessing? I don't know. I know where the BS is, but I don't know where there's any blessing right now. Okay? The blessing, really? The blessing? Okay. All right, and I feel like a loser right now. Thank you. And you know, it's interesting because when I stopped in that moment and I thought about it, it didn't take more than, I don't know, 45 seconds, 60 seconds for me to come up with not just one, not just two, not even just three, but actually to come up with four blessings that were emerging right in the midst of a really, really difficult situation. And I have to say, I left that conversation, well, I left it, you know, A, feeling so much better. I left it also, though, feeling like I could process it with a clearer mind. I walked away feeling like that I was able to sort of think through things without the emotional attachments that I was having with them. And all it took was a slight shift. Slight shift. All it took was for me to stop and to think about it from a different perspective. Listen, I think that there are probably a lot of us who are living and experiencing the results of having all kinds of wrong perceptions about the things that are happening in our lives right now. And the thing is, what we have sensed and what we have felt, and many of you will know exactly what I'm talking about, our focus has become narrow, and the energy and the enthusiasm and the conviction that we need to make the most of our lives, and not just make the most of our lives, but to positively impact the people around us, it's like it's been zapped. And so we've ended up settling. We've ended up going for good, not great. And we're exhausted. But there is good news. And the good news is this, and you know this just as well as I do. You and I may not be able to change what happens around us, control what happens. You know, we may not be able to change the circumstances that show up, sometimes out of the blue, sometimes we see them coming, whatever it might be. We really can't change a lot of those things. But one thing we can do is we can change our perspective. We can change how we're thinking about them. Listen, let me tell you something, okay? Because I get tired of hearing the excuses about this. Thinking well is not a gift. Let me say it again. Thinking well is not a gift. Thinking well is a skill. So don't tell me, well, I'm just a pessimist. No, you're not a pessimist. You are a freaking human being. And listen, in the same way that you've learned how to be pessimistic, you can learn how to be optimistic. Amen? So hurry up, because no one really likes you right now. You know, you're draining the world. You are turning me into a pessimist. What I want to do today is I want to teach you a very simple formula that I think will help us. And I'm not one of those people that likes to just throw out formulas or here's three steps or whatever, but this one I think is good. It's one that I've lived by for quite a while. You've heard me say it before. And it's one that will help us with our perception. It'll help us with our perception of ourselves. It'll help us with our perception of other people. It will help us with our perception of the things that are going on around us. Because what it will do, if you'll take this and you'll apply it to your life, what will happen is you will find that you're able to focus more on what is working instead of focusing so much on what is not working. All right, it will help you to become proactive and creative instead of being reactive all the time. And best of all, it's very simple. Okay, so here it is. All right, you might want to write this down. It's very simple. It's like this: change of pace plus change of place equals change of perspective. Let's say it together. Ready? Change of pace plus change of place equals change of perspective. Change of pace. There's a great example of this in the book of Psalms. Now, so the psalmist David, he is in this moment where he is listening to all those voices around him that is telling him all kinds of crazy things. You know, he's listening to these voices that are casting doubt into his life. He's listening to voices that are causing his perception of reality to be something very different than what God intended for it to be. And here's what he says in Psalm chapter 3, verse 1. This is how it starts. O Lord, how many are my foes? Many are rising against me. Many are saying of my soul, there is no salvation for him in God. It's bad, God. It's bad. It's really bad. There's a lot of people against me. They're talking trash. They're haters. Man, they're telling me that God will not deliver me. But then at the very end, there's this word, Selah. Say it with me. Selah. You know what Selah is? Selah means stop, pause, take a break, and think about what's just been said. Think about what's going on. There is, in this moment, a change of pace for David. And as is the case with so many of the Psalms, and you see this over and over again, when David allows himself to get quiet, when David allows himself to just stop and pause and to get alone with God, something happens. And there's one place in particular where it says that David went off, he went off alone, and he encouraged himself in the Lord. See, there's this pattern we see with David, all right? And if you keep reading, this is exactly what happened. His perspective shift, had a shift. And it goes like, and this is what he says in verse 3. But you, O Lord, are a shield about me, my glory and the lifter of my head. I cried aloud to the Lord, and he answered me from his holy hill. Now, chances are there was not a huge change of events between verse 2 and verse 3, okay? Chances are his situation hadn't changed, but his perspective and his outlook had changed. It changed. So here's the thing. You want to change your perspective? Okay, let me tell you. First of all, you got to start by changing your pace. You got to change your pace. You got to pause. You got to slow down. You got to walk away and get out of the moment. You got to get away from oftentimes what's going on emotionally, because your emotions, you can't always trust your emotions, right? Man, you want to get in trouble? Trust your emotions, right? But you've got to walk away. You've got to get quiet. And then, so you change your pace, but then you've got to change your place, your position. C.S. Lewis, I think he said it really well. He said, what you see and what you hear depends a great deal on where you are standing. Sometimes you just got to change where you're standing. You've got to just, and so having a change of place in this context of what we're talking about today, well, it basically means looking at your problem from a different perspective. It's looking at your problem. It means repositioning yourself so you can observe it differently. And sometimes that'll mean actually getting away. I mean, physically getting away. This last week, something I do on a regular basis is I try to break away. So I found this to be true in my life. Change of pace, change of place equals change of perspective. This last week, I was at a lake in Wisconsin, and I tell you what, it helped me immensely. Because sometimes when you're leading, sometimes, well, heck, when you're living, period, man, things get overwhelming. and you're unable to really see things well. And so sometimes you've got to literally physically get away, break away. I mean, Jesus did it all the time. But sometimes it's not an option, is it? Sometimes in the middle of the day, sometimes in the middle of a situation, you can't just get up and go. So another way to do that, and probably the way we ought to do it most of the time, is just getting very practical and seeing and understanding that getting away and changing our place happens by simply reframing the kind of questions we're asking in the midst of our problems. Reframing the questions that we're asking. Because here's the thing, okay? The questions you ask about your problem or your situation, they have a very interesting way of shaping the perspective that you have about them. All right? In fact, I would even say this. Your ability to handle and oftentimes solve the problem is often determined by the questions you're asking. I mean, look, if you're facing a problem right now and you can't seem to get past that problem, take a look at the questions you're asking. And it could be you're asking the wrong questions, right? Albert Einstein, who was a pretty smart guy, he said this, it's so true. No problem can be solved from the same level of consciousness that created it. Well, we try to do that, don't we? Right? We are like hamsters in a hamster wheel, round and around and around and around, but why aren't I going anywhere? Round and around and around and around, right? Because if you want what you've never had, you've got to do what you've never done. If you want a fresh solution, you've got to ask fresh questions, right? So we can't solve problems with the same kind of thinking that got us there in the first place. We've got to ask different questions. And so here's what I want to do. I want to give you three questions today. And you can come up with more, and I encourage you to do that, but I want to give you three questions in particular that we need to reframe. Because these are three questions that I think every single one of us in this room face in our lives all the time. Three questions. So write these down. Get your phone out. Don't call anyone. You can take a picture, though, if you have a camera on your phone, okay? But let me hit these real quick, okay? The first one is this. The first question that we tend to focus on and that we need to reframe is this one right here. What do I lack? What do I lack? This is a big one. What am I lacking? What don't I have? What am I missing? What don't I have that I need? Now, I don't know about you, but one of the first things that pop into most of our minds when we're facing a task or a challenge or an opportunity, maybe something we're passionate about, and we feel like God's kind of pushing us out of our comfort zone, one of the first things we always tend to focus on are the things that are missing, huh? We focus on what we don't have. We focus on what we're lacking, what's missing. It's so easy to go there. You know, you sense God pushing you towards taking a step of faith. You're asked to take on a new project, a new role, a new position of leadership, an opportunity, whatever it might be. What happens? Most of us, what we immediately do is we go straight to what? I'm not good at that. I don't have what it takes. I don't have the resources. I'm lacking blank. Well, you know, there's a great example of this in the Old Testament, a guy by the name of Moses. Now, here's the thing about Moses. So God was calling Moses to do something he had never done before. And that's when we go there, right, is when we're doing something we've never done before because it's frightening. There's fear. It takes a lot of courage. So God begins to call Moses, and Moses freaks out. And so what does he do? He gives God every reason in the book why he's the wrong guy to do it. Aren't you glad you never do that? And in Exodus chapter 4, we are placed right in the middle of this conversation between God and Moses, and it's very, very enlightening. Moses is going down his list of all the reasons why he's not the guy to do it, and God does something so relevant here. I want to show you. Exodus chapter 4. Says this, verse 1. But Moses protested again. So, you know, he'd been going down the list. What if they won't believe me or listen to me? What if they say the Lord never appeared to you? Then the Lord asked him, What is that in your hand? Huh? What? A shepherd's staff, Moses replied. Listen to this. Throw it down on the ground, the Lord told him. So Moses threw down the staff and it turned into a snake. Moses jumped back, and I would have too. Then the Lord told him, reach out and grab its tail. Now see, all the times he's arguing about this, that would have been the time I would have argued. Are you kidding me? I'm not touching a freaking snake. So the Lord told him, reach out and grab its tail. So Moses reached out and grabbed it, and it turned back into a shepherd's staff in his hand. Now listen to this, verse 5. Perform this sign, the Lord told him. Then they will believe that the Lord, the God of their ancestors, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, really has appeared to you. Now, do you see what's happening here? Moses was so focused on what he didn't have. He was so focused on all the things that he was lacking, that he was embarrassed of, that he felt ashamed of. I can't talk well. I never read Developing the Leader Within You by John Maxwell. I can't lead well. And God says, but do you have a stick? What? What's in your hand? God says, forget all that, okay? Shut your mouth and look at what is right in front of you. Stop focusing on the things you don't have and start focusing on the things you do have. And so that first question, what do I lack? Oh, we just get sucked into that, right? Well, perhaps that's the wrong question. What if we stopped asking that question and started asking this question? What do I have? What do I have? I mean, that's a great question to reframe, right? What do I lack into what do I have? See, you got to understand, God was not asking Moses for any of the things he was lacking. You hear that? God wasn't saying, hey, Moses, I want you to be the best communicator and speaker of all time. And I want you to be the best corporate CEO leader that's ever been on planet Earth. Now, if that's what God would have asked him, then God, that'd be kind of a jerk, right? Because he didn't have any of that. And so Moses, then he could have been like, but God wasn't asking Moses for any of the things he was lacking. I mean, think about the disciples. Jesus didn't call them based on what their strengths were. I mean, it wasn't, hey, Luke, you're a doctor and we need you. No, hello, Jesus, he didn't need a doctor, okay? Look, he wasn't asking Moses to be something he wasn't. He wasn't asking him. All he was looking for was a yes. All he was asking for was obedience. That's it. That's it. Moses, use what you have and watch what I'll do with it. Look, it is so easy to focus on all the things we don't have. It is so easy to focus on all the resources we don't have, all the money that's needed, the talent that is missing, the time, if I just had more time, and half the time we end up overlooking the things that we do have. We miss them. We miss what's already in our hands. And so I ask you, what's in your hand? What do you have? What has God already given you? I mean, it might look like just a simple stick. It might look like nothing more than just an old wobbly piece of wood. But don't you think that God might be able to take and turn that into something beautiful? Besides, here's the thing, you know, on a real practical note, I've seen this a lot. A lot of times what we think we need to get started isn't what we need to get started. Right? A lot of times we're thinking down here, and that's not even the starting point. That's later. So we're thinking down here and going, like, we're forgetting sometimes that we're people, you know, we see somebody that's done something great, and we think they started there. They didn't start there. Are you kidding me? Right? Often what's needed, what you think is needed isn't needed till later, right? And often it's your faithfulness in the little bit that you do have that will open the door for you to get the more that you need later. That's important. It's your faithfulness in the little bit that you do have that will end up being what opens the door for the more that's needed later. Man, that was good. I should charge you for that one. Get the giving bags out again. What did Jesus say? He said, he who is faithful in the little be faithful with much. Don't expect the much if you're not being faithful in the little. See, I wonder what might happen if we would shift our focus onto, you know, more on, and if we'd be more willing to use whatever it is we have in our hands right now instead of always wishing for and complaining about all the things we don't have. Imagine what might happen. What's in my hand today? Man, we overlook it. What's within my grasp relationally? What's within my grasp historically? What's within my grasp resource-wise right now? Don't overlook the little bit that's in front of you. I mean, you have what? We all, I mean, think about in your life. Some of you, you've got friends, you've got a voice, you've got a story, you've got opportunities, you've got uniqueness, those of you who are married, hopefully you have a spouse who loves you. Sorry, that was just funny to me, because anyway. See, imagine how this translates into your home. You know, you come home and it's dinner time and everybody's grumpola. Right? That happened to me this week. My wife's not here so I can say it. I came back from out of town. I was so excited to see my family and they all went out. You know what they all had done? They'd all gotten shots for our trip to Thailand, like an hour before I saw them. The whole family, I'm like, well, listen, you know, you want typhoid would be worse, so you need to straighten up. Anyway, yeah, you want Japanese encephalitis? Okay, then stop it. but what I'm about to tell you I didn't do, because that wouldn't have been a good idea in the moment. So anyway, but what I'm going to say is, imagine, you know, you come home, you sit up to dinner, and everybody, the conversation begins with the complaints of how crappy everybody's day was. Oh, my boss did, you know, this guy did the blah, blah, blah. But then you, because you're you 2.0, right? You're not 1.0, you're 2.0. So because you're you 2.0, you changed it, right? And you say, okay, listen, hey, how about this? Let's talk about the best thing that happened to everyone today. What's the best thing that happened? What's the best thing? And so everybody becomes engaged, and suddenly dinner time becomes the high point instead of the low point. Because we focus on instead of saying, what do I lack, it's what do I have. And here's the next one, all right? The next question to reframe is this one. What can't I do? A couple years ago, I was invited to go to Uganda and spent some time there with an organization called Compassion. And I gotta say, I've traveled to some other places around the world, but that nothing like Africa, or Uganda where I was at. It was an overwhelming experience. I mean, the need, man, it was everywhere. It was so rampant. And then even the aid that comes in, there's so much corruption that you know, it just starts to feel hopeless. And I remember trying to process all of this and feeling so overwhelmed. And I was with Mike Jones, a lot of you remember Mike, and I remember we went back to our hotel one night or one afternoon, and I had these Converse. They were special edition. And I remember, though, taking these Converse off and sitting on the bed and looking at my Converse, and I just started weeping. Because it felt so overwhelming. And I looked at my shoes, and I said, those shoes cost more money than most people make here in, I don't know, a year, you know? And I remember just this overwhelming feeling of I can't possibly do anything here that would put a dent in what I've just seen. I can't possibly. And so, you know, we begin to process it with each other because it was pretty overwhelming. And the more we begin to process it, the more a different question began to come up within me. And I realized the question that I really needed to be asking and focusing on was not what can't I do, but what can we do? And I started thinking about this tribe, and I started thinking about, you know, what maybe we could do. You know, and I remember I came back, and you know this, many of you know this, together, as I shared my stories, you guys were moved, and all of us we ended up in 1 week in sponsoring 222 children. Whew. You know, who are now being fed and taught and loved every day. See, we've got to change our questions because we could use that as an excuse, right, to not do anything. And so instead of always asking, like, what can't I do and being overwhelmed by that, like, well, what can I do? I mean, I might not be able to solve world hunger, but I can feed one person. I mean, I might not be able to start this organization that I'm dreaming about, but what can I do? What can you do? You know, I'll tell you, as a pastor, to be honest with you, sometimes the needs are so, there's so many needs. I mean, email needs, phone calls, Facebook, pigeon carriers, need after need after need. And sometimes, and people ask me to do things, you know, can you do this? Can you do that? Can you do that? And the temptation for me is to just go, okay, if I can't do it for everyone, I'm not going to do it for anyone because that's not fair. You know, but then, of course, what is fair, right? I mean, is there such thing as fair? What do we tell our children, right? It's not fair. No, fair is, you don't, it's not about fair, okay? So what really helped me a while back, I was listening to this podcast from a pastor named Andy Stanley, and he made this statement, and it was so good. He said this: do for one what you wish you could do for all. Instead of giving up, instead of saying, well, man, I can't, there's no way that I can do this for everyone, so I'm not going to do it at all. No, that is such wrong thinking. Do it for one. Do for one what you wish you could do for all. Do take action. See, man, what this question does, I think this question of like, what can I do versus what can't I do, is it helps you to move away and focus less on your weaknesses and your deficit and what you're missing, and you start focusing on what you can do and what you do have and what your strengths are. See, you and I, think about this from a logical standpoint. You and I will not make progress by focusing on the things we can't do, because progress won't happen via the things you can't do. Right, you only make progress via the things you can do. So you might as well start figuring out what those things are. So it'll change our focus, man. You know, I might not be able to do this, but I can do that. I might not be able to publish a book, but I could start a blog. I might not be able to afford to take my wife on a trip to the Cayman Islands, but I could take her on a date to a nice restaurant in town. Yeah, that was nervous laughter. Like, I hope my husband heard that. I might not be able to quit my job and pursue the dreams that I have. Well, what can you do? What can you do? So do it. Take a step. Take a step. Sometimes, man, it's so easy to look at someone like Mother Teresa and go, oh, God, I she's here and I'm there. Well, she didn't start there. She started here. One person. One. And I remember when we were in the thick of our transition here at the Orchard, and this church was dying. And I remember, man, we needed to turn it around. I was helping my dad, and we knew that the only way that we were going to start getting healthy was by seeing a shift in the culture. And the only way the culture was going to shift was by getting new people to come in and reach people outside in our community. But what we knew was, people are going to come in, they got to know about the church. And so I remember us having this idea, okay, we're going to do a sermon series, and we should do a mass mailer that goes to all the homes. And so we started talking about it, and right away, man, it was like, went right to that deficit thinking. It was, and for me, I remember, because I'm going, all right, if we're going to do it, we're not going to do crap. It's not going to look right. We're going to do it nice, because first impressions count. But then that's when it started all coming to me, because I started going, well, what I know is I can't afford to hire a great graphic designer, so maybe we can't do this. And I'll never forget it. I'm sitting downstairs in the basement that we were living in at the time. We hadn't had a paycheck in a long time. Man, we weren't even sure if the church was going to make it at that point. And I remember I'm sitting down in the basement. I'm thinking about this mailer. We got to get this mailer. We got to put it, how are we going to do this? And I finally had to stop and shift my question. So I stopped focusing on what we couldn't do. And I said, okay, what can we do? And I immediately thought of this guy by the name of Kenny. Now, Kenny was this guy who I'd never met before, but I had seen his name because he had commented on my blog a few times. And one time I'd clicked on his name and it took me to his website. And it turns out Kenny is this graphic designer from New York City. And so I didn't forget that. I came into my mind and so I went back online, looked at his stuff again, and I was like, ah, man. I certainly can't, we can't pay him. But let me just call him. So I picked up the phone and I called Kenny and I said, Kenny, I know we've never met. I know you don't know me from Adam, but listen. So we have this idea, and I shared this idea with him, and I said, so I would like to ask you to design this for us. Now we can't pay you anything. And I even said, like, I would personally pay you, but I don't have any money because we're not getting paid. So we can't pay you, but I tell you what, we can't pay you, but here's the thing. If this whole thing does work that we're doing, like the church actually survives, then at least you can say you were a part of it if you do this for us. And before I could even get it out of my mouth, Kenny says, I'm in. I'll do it. And within a week, we had a kicking design, and we were able to do that mailer, and there's still families in this church today who are here because of that moment, that experience. Listen, do not underestimate what you do have. Do not underestimate it. Small does not equal insignificant. Listen. Small does not equal insignificant. Small steps, man. Sometimes people come to me and say, hey, I want to start an organization. Okay? Tell me about your organization. I want to start an organization, and I want to, and they'll share with me their thing, and it's really good, and I'll say, okay, so what's your next step? Well, that's probably like 3 years down the road because I still got to finish school, and I got to do this, and I got to do this, and so, but one day I'm going to start this organization, and so pray for me or whatever, and so I'll usually say something like, well, how about this? How about ask yourself, what can you do now? What steps can you take now? How about this? Find out who's already doing it. Who's doing something similar? And commit the next year to serving them. Be a part of what they're doing. Learn everything you can. Fail on their turf. Learn everything you can. And then when the time comes, take a step. A step. So we reframe. What can't I do to what can I do? And then there's one more. And it's one that... Man, we're faced with every time there's a risk in front of us. And it's this question right here. What could I lose? What could I lose? What could I lose? Have you ever done like me and made the list? Here's all the things that we could really mess up by doing this. Here's all the things. This past week, I was reading the story of David and Goliath. Read that story a gazillion times. But I saw something this week in that story that I had never noticed before. So, little context in case you've been living in a cave and you don't know the story. I mean, really, you know. Even if you're a heathen, you know the story. All right? Okay, if you don't, I'm sorry. Anyway, David goes to kick some giant butt, okay? Before David arrives at the battlefield, everyone who's there, all the soldiers, they are freaked out by this giant. They are so focused on this threat that this giant is presenting to them. And so David shows up, and one of the soldiers says to him something here, very interesting. One of the soldiers says to him, hey, David, the king has offered a pretty sweet deal for whoever takes the giant out. What was that sweet deal? Well, the deal was this. The king says, whoever takes care of Goliath, I will enrich him with great riches. I will give him my daughter. And in case you haven't seen her, she's something else. And the third thing is, I will give that person's father's house exemption from taxes in Israel. Now see, we want to get all spiritual about David. Oh, well, David, the Lord moved him to take care of the giant. The Lord, stop it. The dude got motivated by the deal. Listen, do not underestimate that. You would have too, all right? So what does David do? David is motivated. He goes for it, and he takes out a slingshot, bing, and he takes the giant down. Huge difference between David's perspective of the problem and the soldier's perspective of the problem. Listen, the soldiers were motivated by fear. And so what did they do? Nothing. David, on the other hand, was motivated by what? He was motivated by what he could gain. He was motivated by the opportunity which moved him to action. They were focused on what could be lost. He was focused on what could be gained. Look, anytime you are faced with any great opportunity in your life, anytime you're faced with any, there is always, always going to be the opportunity for failure. There is always going to be the opportunity of loss and of defeat, always. And if there's not the opportunity for defeat and loss and failure, then perhaps you are dreaming way too low. Because if you're dreaming how God wants you to dream, you are going to be facing the possibility of failure and loss every time. And for some reason, though, whenever that occurs, we always want to focus on what? We always want to focus on the risk. And we end up becoming so focused on the risk and what could be lost that we overlook the reward. We overlook it. And so what if instead of focusing on what could be lost, what if instead we started to imagine what could be gained? What if we spent more time dreaming? We spent more time thinking about what things could be like instead of what could be lost if we were to do it? And so see, we reframe this. What could I lose? Here's the better way of asking it. What could I gain? What could I gain? Now, many of you know, because maybe you've read our story or you've been around, you know the Orchard story. My dad, when he was 57 years old, he came to a place where he realized that this church was not reaching people. And there was a lot of unhealth happening. And the one thing that he kept hearing over and over and over again in his heart was this: Larry, one day when you stand before me, the question is not going to be how comfortable were you in your Christianity. The question is not going to be how comfortable were your people in their Christianity. No. The question is going to be, what did you do with what I gave you? And that question motivated him at an age when most pastors are thinking about moving on down to Florida. That question motivated him to take the greatest risk of his entire life, and that was to take this church and to go an entirely new direction. I mean, if you know the story, we worked together during that time. He asked me to come back here to Illinois, and it got tough. It got tough. And man, we started losing family after family after family. And you know, unfortunately, most people don't leave churches well. And so we started losing families. Our giving started going way down because we were making change. And people love change. And I remember a couple of times sitting back in my office or my dad's office with our list of, well, who else is going to be leaving? And if they leave, they're going to leave. And if they leave, and I remember us having a couple conversations where We actually, one time in particular, I remember saying and us discussing that this actually could be our last weekend. I mean, really, if you're new here or if you've just been here a short time, you have no idea. What you see here, wasn't this way. And man, and I remember us sitting there and we were, and I remember one time in a conversation, we said, well, you know what? So we just got to go for it because let's say that it fails. At least we can say we tried and we can feel good about that. But if it works, and many of you, you're here today because it worked. Because the steps were taken and God was faithful. Do you know what I'm learning finally? And then I'm forgetting, and then I'm having to learn again. Until your vision of what you could gain is greater than your vision of what could be lost, you will never take the step that's needed. Until your vision of what you could gain is greater than your fear of what could be lost, you will never, ever take the step that needs to be taken. Your vision has to be greater than your fear. Your vision of what could be gained has got to be greater than your fear of what could be lost. And for us, man, that meant clinging to every story that we started hearing. That is celebrating the daylights. I mean, man, the stories that started coming in, short of making them up, man, we didn't really. But like, there, you know, it's like, man, if we don't get a story this week, we're going to have to make one up. And then one would come in, and we would, that would fuel us. It still happens today when people share, when you email your stories, oh, man, the fuel that is for our team never gets old. We have more weep sessions in our staff meetings because we read these letters and people's lives being changed, and it blows our minds. Such fuel. But those are important because those keep in front of you what can be gained if you continue to push forward, if you continue to push forward with the mission that God's given you, the vision that he's placed in front of you. That's got to stay stronger than your fear of what could be lost. So, we reframe this question, what could I lose? And we ask, what could I gain? What could I gain? Man, what if you made that your question? Instead of what can I lose, what can I gain? Dream, baby, dream. So here's the formula. Change of pace plus change of place equals change of perspective. You want to know something? You heard me share that we're going to Thailand for 6 weeks. And so some of you might go, whoa, what are you doing? You going on a mission trip? I'm not going to lie, we're not going on a mission trip. You know why we're going? We're going because this is our 10th year here at the Orchard. And we're going to go as a family because we understand how important that right there is. Change of pace plus change of place equals change of perspective. And the last thing I ever want to do is end up a burnt out, visionless pastor trying to lead a congregation who wants to go somewhere great. And you know what else? When you take, you know, we believe taking our kids all the way around the, you know, it sounds really good on paper, but you know, the 20-hour flight and the 150-degree weather in Thailand and all that, and we haven't even made all of our plans. We're gonna go there and we're gonna like just hop on trains and go different places around the country and see where it takes us. So, you know, you may not see us again. No, I'm just kidding. No. But we believe, see, that shapes the perspective of our children. Man, it changes how they think about life. Man, part of you 2.0, and we're going to talk about this in the next few weeks, is jerking ourselves out of the comfort zone, getting out of familiarity, beginning to see things that we've been afraid to experience in our life. Some of you, man, we're going to challenge you and push you to take steps and do things you've never done before. Change of pace plus change of place equals change of perspective. If you want to change your perspective, you got to slow down. You got to pause. You've got to change your pace and break away. And then you change your place. And you change your place. You reposition yourself so that you can observe it differently. You can see it from a different angle. And let me tell you something. If you'll do that from the position of faith, Man, if you do it from a position of faith, then your perspective will change. And if your perspective changes, you know what else is going to change? Your reality is going to change. Because what did I say earlier? We all have heard this a million times. The same is true for all of us. Ultimately, your perception will become your reality. I want to close with this passage of Scripture. Paul sums it all up, and I love how he says it. It's almost like he wrote it just for us today, right now. Summing it all up, my friends, I'd say you'll do best by filling your minds and meditating on things true, noble, reputable, authentic, compelling, gracious. The best, not the worst. The beautiful, not the ugly. Things to praise, not things to curse. Put into practice what you learned from me, what you heard and saw and realized. Now listen, do that, and God, who makes everything work together, will work you, into his most excellent harmonies. Would you bow your heads with me? Let's pray. Could we take just a moment, and would you stop and pause, and would you think about the questions that you're asking in your life right now? Would you think about the questions that you've been asking, the things you've been meditating on, the things you've been thinking about, where your perspective has been? My guess is that a lot of us are feeling really, really defeated because we have been asking the wrong questions. And so the challenge is here, I mean, we could just sit here and try to make it super spiritual, but really the challenge is to just do it, is to take what is really practical and to say, all right, even if you just take those three questions, so I'm going to start asking those questions. I promise you, your perspective will start to change. See, here's the thing. I feel like over and over in this series, what keeps coming up is this idea that ultimately, at the end of the day, it's really not about what happens to you. It's not what happens around you. It really comes down to what is happening on the inside of you. And so, God, we ask you for the courage that we need. Some of us, we're addicted to wrong thinking. And it's not so much the issue, isn't so much that can we change. I think for some of us, like, we don't want to change because there's something comforting and soothing about where we've been. But it's so far from your best. And so I pray for courage. God, I pray for courage that we could ask the questions that need to be asked, that we would begin to shift our focus on what we have to contribute. And God, what we want to make happen, that we believe you're calling us to do, and the steps you're calling us to take, and how you want us to lead, and how you want us to inspire others with our lives. And so I do pray for courage for every person here today. And may we be the kind of people who we could say, just like Paul talks about in that passage, that we are people who fill our minds and we meditate on things that are true and noble and reputable and authentic and compelling and gracious. That we'd be people who, instead of thinking the worst, we think the best. Instead of focusing on what's ugly, we focus on what's beautiful. And instead of focusing on things to curse, we focus on things to praise and to worship you and thank you for. And God, you said that if we'll do that, you will work us into your most excellent harmonies. And so even in a moment when we stand and we sing, may the harmony that comes from our hearts, may it be reflective of the beautiful movement we're a part of, which is your harmony in this earth, your mission, your beauty, your call. We pray these things now. We ask them together, the name of your Son, Jesus. Amen. Amen.